All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Tornado Tony Pennycow.
And Psychic Tom Padgett. Tarot cards laid out and crystal ball unveiled.
All right, this week we're not broadcasting from a stadium, but we're pretty close to it. No, we got a big snowstorm coming up the East Coast, finishing up tonight. So been shoveling all day, but otherwise, good day. Anyway, we got so much stuff to talk about this week. First off, I guess we'll go to the heavyweights. The the big boxing match, of course. It said that I was going to have to watch it, so I had to watch it. Frustrating as it was to try to keep track of a UFC free feed and a boxing free feed at the same time, I did watch Wilder versus Ortiz, and shocking win for Wilder, I think. I thought that he was losing steam and going downhill and about to get a wake-up call and being knocked out, but he's pulled it off again. A late starter.
Yeah,
horrible form.
You know, Tony, what we said last week, Tony, was so true about Ortiz setting traps, and it just came out kind of like we thought it would. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't get to see the fight live. You know, I was at the La Cava boxing show, so. As we were getting to the after party, checking statuses online, and the one was like, when Wilder got hurt, because someone was like, man, Wilder's out on his feet, he's wobbling, this fight's all but over, and I'm like, oh, shit, you know, I made a breakfast bet, and I bet on Wilder, I'm like, shit, I don't want to pay my dad breakfast, you know, that's horrible. So I was like, shit, and then, you know, we get to the club, because then I didn't get any more updates, because I had kind of hit a bad area. We get to the Italian club, and I go in there, and it was funny. I was sitting down with Jimmy McNally, who is the longtime coach of the U.S. Naval Academy. I mean, you figure, he's been, and I'm sure Rich knows him, he's been the coach of the Naval Academy since I went to Lock Haven. That was 1994, and I think he started there a few years prior to that. And he is not a big Wilder fan. He was telling me he was one of the coaches when they went to Beijing, I guess 10 or so years ago. And he was like, you know what? He's like, a lot of talent, but sometimes doesn't always put it together. But then again, 10 years ago, you're talking about a person that's maybe less mature. People do grow up. People do make changes. People do improve. But the one thing he did say about Wilder, he says, remember in Rocky IV when they had the Drago hitting that punch calculator thing, and, you know, Drago averages 1,850 pounds per square inch. Well, they said Wilder's jab was registering higher than a lot of guys' right hand. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, you talk about a guy that when he hits, I mean, he hits. I mean, he dropped Ortiz in the fifth round of the crowd while they're losing the first four. Then he won the fifth round with a missile of a right hand that dropped Ortiz. And then Ortiz came back in the seventh round. A little bit of controversy going into the eighth round because the doctor, you know, the referee called for the doctor to examine Wilder. He didn't do it between rounds. He did it as the round was about to start. And I'm not really sure why. You know, why he would do it then, because it did give Wilder an extra 15-20 seconds, and you know, it helped him you know, get his bearings back. And you know, the you know, it was 10th round, I mean, he landed, I mean, just a bomb of a shot, and next thing you know, I mean, Ortiz is down, and Ortiz gets up, and you know, he's on him like Wilder is, you know, wild, crazy. I mean, the method was madness. But that uppercut he landed to end the fight was, I mean, boom, you know. And down and out he was.
Yeah, it was quite the comeback. And I'll tell you, I was puzzled with Wilder's start because not only was it a slow start, but he just really didn't seem to want to be there to fight, especially not for a guy who said he's going to knock this dude out in the third round. And as it's getting into the fight, he's using his jab, yeah, but he's pawing it the whole time. And he barely even threw a right. And I'm just like, what the hell is this guy's problem? Did he not want to fight tonight? And, you know, when he get push comes to shove, and when he has to do it or lose his title, then he finally decides to fight. But I just don't get it. I mean, we talk about the jab all the time. And, you know, Chad Dawson was probably the guy who used the pawing jab the best. But you can't win a fight with just the pawing jab.
Living and dying off the jab. So what I want to ask you, because I know you were a big proponent of using the jab, and then I'm going to step in and I'm going to kind of do a valid point as well. Did you ever have trouble with a southpaw because you weren't able to use your jab?
No. No. Okay. No. Well, I mean, I didn't fight enough of them, I don't think. There was like one kid on our team who was a southpaw that I had to spar with, so. But no, I never had it. Because I relied on my jab for everything, so. I wouldn't have trouble fighting a guy with three hands with a jab. I don't think. But I was just blown away at the fact that he was going to combine his use of the jab to the pawing jab, which is really only the jab that you use for a setup. And then he's not using the right hand behind it ever. I just was like screaming at the monitor, like, what is your problem, dude? Yeah, and you could use the starching jab when Ortiz is trying to come in with his bombs, and it would have stopped him in his tracks a bunch of times, but nope. You could just use a quick jab to, you know, set up a punch or get out of the way. If he's using it for defense, you know, to keep the guy off him, then you could still put some power behind it. You don't have to paw it at him. You look like John Jones in there. Who's getting ready to finger poke somebody if he had those different gloves on. But I just don't get a guy like that with that much range, power, and ability to just throw all those rounds away. And not only that, but put himself at risk for getting knocked out. I mean, he dug his own hole there to the point where he almost did get knocked out. Because he just can't put these things together that anybody at his stage should have already figured out. I don't know. I can't imagine that was his game plan going in. That's all I can say. But he pulled off the miracle.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, in my career, it's like, and it's funny, I remember the exact moment when I finally started to figure out southpaws. And I know one southpaw you definitely did fight was Jesse Bond. Because I fought him twice. So if you go back, I think freshman year, I didn't fight any southpaws, and I don't think I sparred with any. I don't remember sparring with any, even down in Philly. No, I did spar with one big heavyweight that we had, and I had some trouble with him, but he was just a big overgrown oaf that eventually I was able to get to him because he was just winding himself and he was walking into some of my own right hands. Same thing sophomore year. I sparred one southpaw sophomore year, once again, another heavyweight, big overgrown, big strong guy. And he was just wailing at me till he ran out of gas. And then I kind of stepped in and took it to him, but only because he was out of gas. The real trouble I really started having was my junior year. That's when I fought this guy, Dave Adams, who was a one- or two-time national champion. And I really struggled with him because he was tall, he was rangy, he had long arms. And I couldn't uncork my jab. And what I used to like to do, especially with taller guys, is catch and counter. So when they would throw their traditionally left jab, I'd catch it with my right hand and step in with my own jab. So I was like, I struggled there. In fact, hey, I just got a message from your boy, Vinny Paz. We're joking around right now. He's cracking me up. I couldn't catch a ton or Dave Adams jab, and I just couldn't do anything with him. And I eventually lost to him in the Nationals. That summer, I was sparring again, once again, another tall, rangy southpaw down in Philadelphia. And I was just struggling like you couldn't believe. And I was trying to counter his jab with my own straight right hand, but I was just, you know, I kicked behind, and he was stepping over to his right, and I was missing it. And he was stepping over to his right towards my left hook, but I'm so concentrating on my right hand, I wasn't even going towards my bread and butter. So my jab was ineffective, but my right hand then became ineffective, and I was focused getting away from my best punch, my left hook. But I kept working on it, kept working on it, kept working on it. The next year, my senior year, we had brought a kid. He was a very talented boxer, terrible training habits, and he was like a head case. First time we ever sparred, he was a southpaw, tremendous athlete. And for the first round, I mean, I am struggling because I couldn't get my shots off like I wanted to. And second round, he actually caught me leading in, and he caught me with a right hook, and I went down. Third round, he stepped on my foot because we got our feet tangled. I went down again. I'm frustrated. I'm angry. It's not working. And then I went back to what brought me to the dance. If I can't use my left to use a jab and counter with the jab, I arced it around and brought my left hook to the side, and he walked right into it, and boom. And that moment there, I learned how to fight samples. If my jab was ineffective because it was leading into their lead hand, then I came around on the side, I stepped over to the left with a left hook, and then threw my right hand. And that's how I learned.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of techniques, and then there's always the technique from the Rocky movie where they just tie one hand to your side so you figure it out, right?
Yeah.
You could try that. Actually, that was done in real life on the real Rocky, too, at one point, I think. But it's a story for another day.
Tie the rope between the feet, I think that.
But yeah, there was a lot of boxing going on over the weekend. It wasn't just that fight. I actually caught a little bit of the earlier fight too. I don't have it right in front of me, but it was Andre Durrell versus I forget the other guy, but it was I think it was Kataguchi or something like that. It was a weird name.
Rematch that Durrell won the first time on a disqualification when his one trainer then sucker punched the fighter.
Great. Yeah, I do remember that.
Since I had DVR at the fight anyway, I just kind of skipped over that one.
Well, it was kind of crazy because it looked at one point like Stitch called the fight, the cut man. And, you know, it was like they're trying to figure out whether he's going to keep going or not. And stuff. I think finally somebody asked him, and he was like, "No, I'm good." So they ended the fight, but I just caught the very end of it. Also, over the weekend, we had Kell Brook getting another win over Sarhei Rabchanka. Never really heard of the guy, but also Dmitry Bivol got a win over Sullivan Barrera. As we said.
Yeah, I saw highlights of that fight. Barrera, a very good fighter, tough, you know, strong. You know, he gave Andre Ward a good fight. He beat Joe Smith, who has a win over Bernard Hopkins. He pretty much handled him, and he got tuned up. He lost every round, and then he got knocked out in the 12th.
Right. And we've got some decent fights coming up over the weekend, but we've also got to talk about this one just because it happened last Thursday night while we were on the broadcast, but it actually was in Tokyo, but so it was probably like hours before, but anyway, Lewis Neary got a big win, actually retired Shinsuke Yamanaka, but that's only half the story. You guys are going to be... This is a crazy one. The WBC has indefinitely suspended Lewis, and it's quite the story. He knocked his opponent out, knocked him down 4 times in a second round knockout victory on Thursday in Tokyo. So this guy goes and, you know, destroys this dude's homecoming party, this Asian dude. He had been stripped of the 118-pound world title belt the previous day for arriving at the weigh-in 123 pounds on his first attempt to make weight. Ultimately, he got down to only 121, still 3 pounds over the division weight limit. The fight went ahead anyway, with Neary ineligible to claim the vacant belt if he won. The WBC decided to punish Neary for his unprofessionalism. But they said they implemented several procedures which have worked for many years with absolute success, including changing the official weigh-in to 1 day before the fight, implementing the monitoring weigh-in 30 to 7 days before the fight, etc. For a bantamweight champion to arrive at the official weigh-in 5 pounds over is simply unacceptable. The WBC is formally suspending Lewis Neary indefinitely. He'll be mandated to appear at a hearing to conduct a thorough investigation of the circumstances. So he's going to be dropped from the WBC's rankings and not eligible to box for any of its world or regional titles. Now, this is the second consecutive fight that Neary has had issues with. In addition to being dramatically overweight for this fight, after he knocked out Yamanaka in the fourth round to win the title, he failed a voluntary Anti-Doping Association administered drug test as part of the WBC's clean boxing program. He tested positive for the banned substance Zilpaterol in a sample provided on July 27th in Tijuana, Mexico, but the result was not known until after the fight. And what did he blame? Contaminated meat. And we're going to get to that story in a minute, because that's another one. Mexico and their contaminated meats. The WBC actually issued a ruling in that one, which it said it believed that the positive test result was indeed a result of food contamination. And they didn't strip Neary of the title.
So, Richard, they didn't discover this till after the fight?
Yes.
He had failed the drug test?
Somehow. Supposedly.
Okay, something I'm missing, I guess. I kind of thought that the whole thing was before, so that no one would have that unfair advantage. Oh, wow.
And I said contaminated meat's going to be an issue because we've got this big fight between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. Supposed to be coming up here. Now, that doesn't appear like it's in jeopardy, but we've got another situation with contaminated meat and Canelo Alvarez. And I actually did some heavy research on this one because I wanted to find this out. This has been happening too much. We've got the Huey and Tyson Fury brothers there claiming that they ate a bad boar. That was a crazy one. They got a wild boar that had some bad shit in it. It was on steroids. It was eating steroids, so they ate it, you know. I don't know.
I have visual of that, you know.
We had the guy that was in Russia. He claimed he got invited to a hotel and ate a bad steak. They fed him a purposeful bad steak. I forget what that guy's name was, but I'm pretty sure it was a cruiserweight or a heavyweight. And it wasn't too long ago, a few years ago, I think we were talking about that one.
Let me ask you this. Is there a such thing as a bad boar?
A bad boar.
I'm just trying to think of it.
It's a bad boar meat. Yeah. I don't know. I guess they left it out too long and it had a chemical reaction. I don't know. It just turned into steroids.
Yeah.
But no, this meat thing is a big deal, because they do actually have regulations in the United States that prevent people from using this, what's this? It's the big C word, this big thing that Canelo got popped with. Obviously, there's different chemicals that they use on the beef cattle, because this is a different one that we just talked about, but it was Cleno something that Canelo got busted with, and I looked it up, and they do use it for a performance-enhancing drug. It is definitely used for that. But it is also used for cattle, to do the same thing for cattle that it does for humans. Give it more muscle mass, help it lose weight, you know, help the cows prepare for professional fights.
No, I wonder if they have organic food in Mexico. I would assume they do.
I don't know. Maybe. But, you know, it's at the same time you can say, all right, A, B, and C says he ate contaminated meat. You could probably also argue, on the other hand, that he wanted contaminated meat, because the reality is traces of this stuff that they found in contaminated, and guys that have eaten contaminated meat, and then you look up how they use it as a performance-enhancing drug, and it's traces of the stuff they use to use it as an enhancing drug. So, yeah, you could draw a little gray line there, and it's tough.
Well, yeah, it kind of reminds me of the tainted supplements. We're back on that again. You know, the whole tainted supplements argument.
Well, where did you get the tainted supplements? Taintedsupplements.com?
Yeah, well, that's... I got to go into a GNC and say, where's that section at? Where's it at? Let me know. Gotta get rid of these pipe stems hanging from my shoulder, you know?
So you never know if, you know, they were saying, well, Canelo's having a tough time making weight. Let's go get one of them jacked up cows. And he just got the benefit, you know, and then they say, oh, yeah, it's the meat. And that made me think about that situation, because I also saw Robert Garcia talking about it. And he says, yeah, everybody knows the meat's all tainted down there. So, you know, he's like, I'll probably test positive right now then for that stuff. Because I ate some meat the other day when I was in Mexico. So they all know it, you know, and it's sold over the counter there. That's the other thing. This clenbuterol, I think it's called. And basically you can get it as like kind of like an inhaler, because it helps your lungs too. So you can get it over the counter, and it's obviously used for bad purposes for both cattle and humans, as an enhancement thing. So the only problem is, this is a voluntary program that these guys are in. You don't know what's in the contract. So it's probably not going to throw off the whole fight, but, you know, if Canelo is to be, you know, believed at his word, he's going to have to take a hair test, because he did say he would take any test to prove that it was just the meat. But even a hair test, it's only going to show whether there was long-term use or it was just a one-time incident. So, whether he purposely went out there and sought out this contaminated meat is going to be the big question. Did he go to the stockyard and point out the one with the big biceps and say, I want him?
They should still have the fight. And they should drop the ticket prices and make them available for someone like me.
There you go. Hey, you could sue. Remember they sued Manny? They sued Manny for the shoulder injury, right? You could sue Canelo for jeopardizing the fight with his lame excuse, eating the steroid cow. Anyway. So Golovkin's obviously pretty pissed off. He wants him held accountable. Came out with some words today about it. If I can get it to come up here. He said he was shameful and stupid for his positive drug test.
Right.
Beautiful words.
Good words.
So that's it. Remember we were talking about multiple times on the show before, a guy with one of the best nicknames in boxing, Mark the Bazooka DeLuca.
The Italian Bazooka,
yeah, I guess. Well, he shortened it to Bazooka, I guess, because okay. According to Dan Raphael, anyway, cause he's going into the big time. He's going to be on ESPN, and I actually pretty sure this kid's father or uncle is the one that gave me my first formal boxing lesson at the place I used to box at just to learn. And he had the same name, Mark DeLuca. I was probably his father. He was a bike cop. I remember that. But anyway, Mark DeLuca is going to be fighting Cleveland's Michael Moore, and it's actually going to be in my place where I went to high school, in Quincy, Massachusetts, which was pretty devastated by these storms that we had. The last one in particular. Just unbelievable damage. But anyway, Mark's from Quincy there too, and they're going to have a ESPN Golden Boy Promotions card from this place called the Marina Bay Sportsplex, which I don't think I've ever been to, but it's in Quincy. I've been to Marina Bay. It's right on the water. Right on the ocean there in Quincy, Mass. But it's promoted by Murphy's Boxing, Golden Boy Promotions, and ESPN, all doing it together. DeLuca's up to 20-0 now. We got to get this guy on our show. 20-0, 12 KOs. He's 30 years old. He's a southpaw, served with the Marine Corps in Afghanistan. And Moore is 15-1 with 7 KOs. And he's 31 years old. He'll be appearing in the first televised bout of his 8-year career. And then we got Jason Quigley in the co-main event as a middleweight. He's 13-0 with 10 KOs. He's 26 years old from Ireland. He's going to fight Daniel Rosario, who's 11-3 with 10 KOs. 29 years old from Puerto Rico. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that one. That's going to be March 31st on ESPN. So we'll definitely have to scope that one out. Manny Pacquiao, talking about being sued. He is not being sued right now, but he's over there in Manila planning his next fight. I don't know if you guys heard anything about this, but it's kind of interesting, these names that he's dropping now. Lucas Matisse or Danny Garcia are the two finalists for the Manny Bachelor.
Wants to watch them for 2 weeks from now?
He wants to do it in June. May or June. He rejected an undercard offer to face Mike Alvarado.
Is he still fighting? My God, I thought he was tired.
Mike Alvarado.
Yeah.
And the big news is they're going to fight in Malaysia. He's not going to go to Vegas. He's not going to come to the United States whatsoever. He's going to go over to Malaysia because they've been demanding it, apparently. And obviously it's closer to where he works in the Senate. So he's got some important stuff to do there. And he's going to do it in June, May or June, to avoid conflicts there with his job, too. May or June. And big one. Big score for Bellator the other day was announced. We've got Mirko Krokop coming back. That's a big story. Coming back to face Roy Nelson. So, Roy was on the bad side of that fight in the tournament. Now they're putting him right back in action against Mirko Krokop. And Tom, I didn't get to read it, but you sent me this article about Krokop didn't really do his suspension. What was that all about?
That there was a follow-up on Sherdog, if you'll check that out. I just found it before the show, and this guy's really on a rant about Bellator ignoring that. This could be a huge issue. And for all that time that he supposedly could not fight for 2 years, he fought in Europe and he fought in Japan also. So it's kind of the controversy. And this is the anniversary of the Ken Shamrock Hoist Gracie fight, where both contestants, I think their age added up to triple digits between the two of them. And then we had the infamous Kimbo and Dada fight with the heart attacks. So this cut is really holding Bellator's feet to the fire about that. So,
all right. There's another article. Sergio Pettis, a guy we interviewed back way before he was in the UFC ever, and he was just a young little prospect. You know, his brother was better known, still is, but Sergio Pettis has come out and stuck up for our boy CM Punk, saying he could take Floyd Mayweather with one hand behind his back. No. He's basically saying he's transformed, though. Sergio is talking about Punk. And we haven't heard, obviously, any other opponent other than Floyd as waiting in the wings here for CM Punk.
But well, I haven't heard anything about Punk having another fight since his debut.
Right.
Have I missed that, or have you heard anything about it?
Well, apparently they're gearing up to get him a fight, but, you know, it's really nothing, no names out there that I've heard. But Sergio says CM Punk is evolving a lot. He's definitely training hard. This guy's there every day. It's a tough camp. You train once in the beginning of the day. At night, we have a two-hour workout with pad sessions on top of bag work, on top of cardio, and CM Punk's at every single practice. I see a lot of improvement. His skill, his understanding of the sport is a lot different. I think he's getting more comfortable in understanding positions now instead of thinking he's about to react. It's cool to see his transformation. I think he's going to do great if he has a fight coming up or whatever, you know, for him just to kind of compete. He's looking well. Yeah, for sure, man. He's a hard-working athlete, and I like I said, he's getting a better understanding of the movements.
Well, I guess we'll have to see him at the smaller shows. I have to think that they wouldn't bring him back to the UFC, but I've been wrong before.
Well, no, Dana White has said that he wants to give him another fight, so I'm pretty sure they will give him another one, but it's just a matter of finding who it's going to be. Maybe they'll put
they're going to say he won't have to go back to the smaller shows and actually learn his craft the hard way. He'll come right back to the big dance.
Right.
Unbelievable.
They could always make him a coach on The Ultimate Fighter across from Floyd Mayweather.
Hey, anything for ratings, right? Anything for ratings.
Unreal. Anyway, we've got a big UFC fight to talk about, of course. Cannot escape that one. UFC 222, Cyborg did the Cyborg thing and totally demolished her opponent. Wasn't really much of a story there.
Ugly fight.
It was almost like Cyborg was chuckling, I thought, as Yana was trying to take her down.
Yeah.
And she had to do a little grappling.
That just turned into a street mugging. I felt so bad for Yana. I mean, she knew what she signed up for, but I kind of get the feeling about a minute into it, she got hit harder than she was really anticipating.
Yeah.
Get that kind of look on her face, you know. It's like, oh my God, what am I doing here? No disrespect to her, but it's just, it's a terrible problem the UFC has. I mean, now they've got to try to pump up this Nunez situation. I don't see that generating a buzz. So I don't know. It's a mess marketing her, that's for sure.
Right. Then we got Brian Ortega fighting Frankie Edgar, and what a knockout that was. First time Frankie Edgar has ever been stopped, and just an uppercut from hell. Just crazy punch from downtown, really. 4 minutes and 44 seconds in, so there was just 16 seconds left in the round. And
and I think Ortega is Max Holloway better not be looking past Brian Ortega. This is another one of those blueprints to beat him. I don't think it exists. No one's done it yet. And no. For a guy that's that slick with jiu-jitsu and then is taking his boxing so serious, I was watching him on the countdown. He has a great boxing trainer. So, I don't know. I mean, always a great champ, but Ortega just seems right now that this is his time.
And Edgar just kind of walked into it, you know. It's not really like he did a whole lot of things wrong. Just got hit with a truck. So, tough loss for him, but he'll be back. And then we had Sean O'Malley fighting Andre Sukumtoth, and then we were going to see if Sean O'Malley was the real deal. And heard a lot since this fight.
Rich, that fight had to be, and kind of the consensus of everyone that watched it, some of the most incredible demonstration of low fight IQ. I'll let you do the blow by blow there for the benefit of our audience.
Well, basically, you know, Sean O'Malley was kicking this guy's ass, literally and figuratively. First two rounds, you know, he was handling him. Sukumtoth really had nothing. He just was all speed, nothing put together, no tactics. And Sean O'Malley has done just about everything in the business. I mean, you could tell he's got such a well-rounded game. And he was hitting him with everything he could and throwing a lot of kicks. And so he injured his foot at some point. I believe it was in the first round he first injured it. But he got to the point where he could
not... Fracture. I think slight fracture.
Yeah. First round he could not walk on it. I mean, first round he could walk on it. But I mean, first round he did it. And then by the third round he could not walk on it. So could barely put any pressure on it. And what does Sukumtoth do? He has no idea, apparently. He takes him down to the ground. Keeps him on the ground for the entire third round instead of letting the guy try to stand up, and the fight would have been over because the guy wouldn't have been able to stand up.
Yeah, just kick his other leg. You know, Tony, I don't know if you ever remember the Three Stooges when Curly was wrestling. And you remember that? Well, this fight took on aspects of that. This guy's corner is telling him, keep it standing. Don't go to the ground. And then O'Malley tried to get back to his feet. I mean, being on the ground was the safest place for O'Malley. Unbelievable. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look back and try to think of worse strategy. And again, I don't mean to be all doing all this trash talk, but come on, where's your game plan?
Well, that was some trash talk.
And Andrei Arlovsky made Stefan Struve look like an oversized punching dummy in their fight.
Doesn't that shatter the A beats B and B beats C, so C has no chance against A?
Yeah.
You know, very tactical fight there. And you know who the third man I'm talking about, right, Rich?
Yeah. they call this guy the skyscraper. He's supposed to be this big, tough guy, but it's another one where, you know, I'm always talking about this one guy, but Chuck Kongo. You know, he's built like a brick shithouse. You think he's going to be knocking people out, you know, just this amazing fighter, and he goes in there and he just lays down on people for three rounds.
Sucks to watch. Struve's career is really taking a nosedive.
And Struve barely got back to the sport because of a heart issue. Now he's back there, and he's not really doing anything with it. And, you know, he's got all the length and height in the world, and he's just not dropping bombs on people and not getting anywhere close to throwing knockout punches or kicks or anything.
Yeah, the aggression was not there, and it seems like had he really looked good, he'd be right back in the mix.
Yeah.
Because he can say something very few other heavyweights can say. He holds a victory over the champ, and I'm sure that Stipe seems, from what I know of him, he's the kind of personality. I don't care. Doesn't matter. I don't think of that stuff in the past. I don't think he's dying for a rematch. But I think deep down inside, he would like to erase that.
Right. And we had a couple female fights. Ketlin Vieira beating Kat Zingano and Mackenzie Dern beating Ashley Yoder, both by split decisions. And, you know, all those girls came to fight, and it was definitely some good action in both of those fights. tough girls all around. And we had one of the best knockouts of the night, Alexander Hernandez coming in and wiping out Benil Dariush. That was vicious.
That surprised me.
Very vicious punch.
That surprised me.
And pretty much just laid him right out. No extra punches necessary. But then we had John Dodson. Didn't look as great as he usually does against Pedro Munhoz. He got kicked in the nuts a couple times. That helps screw your game up. But
Crowd was not happy about that fight. No. Crowd was not happy at all. Lots of booze.
And so he ended up with the split decision. And talk about booze. Hector Lombard laid out C.B. Dalloway, put him out on a stretcher. But it was after the bell, so he got disqualified. And I don't know where he gets off saying after the fight that he thinks C.B. Dalloway was looking for a way out. Hey, you hit the guy after the bell. He was knocked
and
the fuck out.
This Lombard guy is like an MMA welterweight equivalent of Mike Tyson with his power early on.
Nice.
And he landed a beautiful 1-2 right in the grill. And yeah, these guys on the underground, oh, Dalloway was milking it. He was faking it. You know, I learned a long time ago in this business, you don't know what another person's feeling. You don't know. When you don't know how someone's reacted to a punch, how bad they're hurt. You know, and all these mommy's basement guys that would have a heart attack if they had to get in there. So, you know, he was just faking. Oh, you really know this. There's one psychic on the underground, okay? There's one psychic on the underground, no more.
So, yeah, CB got the win. And then we had another knockout. Zach Otto spoiled Mike Pyle's retirement party. Mike is another fighter in his 40s there, and was calling it quits. It was supposed to be a nice big win in his last fight, but you know, he ended up on the bad side of a knockout. 2 minutes and 34 seconds into the first round. And then we had Cody Stammen beating Brian Caraway by split decision, and Jordan Johnson in the first fight of the night getting the big win over Adam Milstead.
In the Callaway fight, we had a judge there, a little bit of controversy. Did you hear who the judges were in that fight?
I did not.
Or did you hear who one of the judges?
Adelaide Bird. Oh. Adelaide Bird, right?
It goes on, and that's just what I'm thinking about this May. I don't know who they're going to have, but... Here we are again.
Yeah, it was funny when I saw all the split decisions. Adelaide Bird was probably involved in all of them, right?
And why not? I mean, if you're above the law and if there's no consequences for at the very best incompetence, I'll leave it at that. But if there's no consequences, well, there you go. And did you hear what Joe Rogan was saying about her?
Who?
Did you hear Joe Rogan's rant during the live broadcast of everything? I'll have to send this to you guys.
I don't think
send me a link for it. Oh, he went on a rampage about Adelaide Bird. He says, boy, I bet she's driving a Ferrari after that Canelo fight.
Oh.
I think Cormier's trying to be different. Well, you know, she's a nice lady. And Rogan says, yeah, she's nice. So is my mom. But I don't want my mom judging fights. Oh, it was just classic.
Nice.
I gotta send that to you guys. I'll find it.
So, as far as stuff coming up this weekend, we really don't have much on the MMA side. We got the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. But for boxing, we've got some good boxing matches coming up next weekend. Ivan Baranchuk taking on Peter Petrov. That was just a last second step in for Peter. That's going to be a big one for him. Baranchuk is a pretty tough guy for him to step up and fight. We've also got Regis Prograis battling Julius Ndongo. This is on both tomorrow night, Friday night. And on Saturday, we've got a few worth talking about, too. We got Rances Barthelemy, a guy I saw out in Vegas a few times from the Premier Boxing Champion stable. Warriors Boxing, too. I used to promote him. He's fighting Carol Relic on that card there. Richard Comey versus Alejandro Luna, also on Saturday. And... we got Fedor Papazov fighting Howick Babraham. That's a funny name. Oscar Valdez versus Scott Klieg. Brian Carlos Castano versus Cedric Vichu. And the biggest one over the weekend, I guess, you could say. Sergey Lipinets fighting Mikey Garcia.
Yes. You know, when Mikey Garcia's on, I tend to cancel plans.
So, I guess I'll have to watch that one because there's going to be no UFC stuff on or anything. I'll have to tune into that one. Other than that, there's really not much in the news this week. I do,
Well, I do want to provide you guys some humor, because, you know, that's what I do. I'm a humorous guy. I can't help it. So, about a year ago, I'm at the LA Fitness. Maybe 10 months ago. You know, because the one manager that left in May was still there. So, it would have been late this springtime. And this guy was in there, and actually, Rich, I'm going to give you a New England Patriots reference in a minute. This guy played lacrosse at Penn State with Chris Hogan, who is now a pretty well-respected wide receiver for the Patriots, right?
Did you know the Philadelphia Eagles and the New England Patriots both had a transaction involving a Bennett the other day?
Well, I don't know. The Eagles got Michael Bennett.
And we got rid of a Bennett. Yeah, we got rid of Martellus Bennett.
Oh.
He was too expensive. But go ahead. What were you saying?
Well, this guy, he played lacrosse with Chris Hogan, and, you know, he always mentions, like, oh, yeah, I knew Chris Hogan. I'm like, oh, well, I'm an Eagles fan, so I don't care. But last year he comes up and he, you know, he starts talking about boxing, and, you know, he wants to turn pro. How many amateur fights have you had? None. Okay. You're about 30 years old, okay. A little old to start, you know. Where have you been training?
Well,
nowhere, really. Yeah.
Well, I'm, okay, no. If I wanted to turn pro right now and have a few fights,
okay, I could do it even if we want, right? Because I've been involved in the game for 23 years now, and I have some experience. I just have to, you know, just knock the rust off. You know, but I'm not going to make a long, I'm not going to make a deep run into, you know, going for a title now, you know? Someone that had maybe 2, 3, 4 fights, you know, just to kind of say I did it, yeah, I could still pull that off. This guy at 30-some years old, he's like, I want to box pro. Okay, well, I played lacrosse at Penn State. Okay, you know, I'm like, all right, how many amateur fights you have? None. Okay, where you been training at? Well, I mean, you know, just going to the gym and, you know, and I watch some videos, and I have a friend of mine, he teaches me a few things, and okay, is your friend a trainer? Well, not really, but I trust him. Oh my god, this guy's like, I mean, and they said, like, he's a little, you know, he's when I say someone's not normal, that's not a good thing, you know, right? So, you know, he's there, and I'm like, okay, so I always kind of watch him out of the corner of my eye, and like the one day he's like doing like the shadow box, and it looks like he's doing like a Street Fighter video game, you know, and he's sitting there throwing these goofy ass looking combinations, and his footwork is terrible. But I'm like, you know, it's one of those people, it's like, you know, as a trainer, there are certain people I'm going to be really hard on. If you're someone that comes into my gym and I feel there's a lot of potential in you, but, you know, you're not giving 100%, I'm really going to bear down on you because I want you to reach your potential. And there are some days you may hate me, but I'm doing it for your good. Just like Dr. Cox did to me, just like my trainers in Philly did to me, like Coop did to me. They would sometimes be hard on me because they wanted me to elevate myself and work harder. Other people that I'm going to be really hard on are people that, you know, I think are jokes, that I'm like, you know what, let me just break you and get you the hell out of here. And prove to you, yeah, let me just prove to you that you're a joke. So I go into the gym tonight, and I always see this guy every so often anymore. So tonight he happens to be in the back room, the aerobics room, because they don't have a class, until 5:45 on Thursdays. So I know my timing class is at 5:45. If I can get in that room by 4:50 and be taped up by 4:57, I can do 15 minutes straight shadow boxing, so 5 rounds, no break, glove up, and I have a set routine I do on the heavy bag, 30 minutes straight, no breaks, but it's not like I'm going balls to the wall either. It's a lot of, like, aerobic type of, you know, stuff. I don't throw certain types of punches because I don't like doing that on sandbags or a little too hard for my hands. So I'll give a good 30 minutes. I'll keep my body moving at all times. I'm throwing a lot of punches, but not full mustard on them, you know? So, and then when that 30 minutes is up, it's right when the class is about to start. I know the instructors. I'm cool with them. They're cool with me. So when I get into the room, this clown is already in there, and he's doing some type of shadow boxing, whatever, for about 30 seconds. Then he gets a drink of water. I'm like, okay. So I'm watching him, and he's looking in the mirror and doing all this and that. I'm now taped up. He still hasn't really done anything. Then he starts to move around a little bit. I'm in the process of now my shadow boxing, and I'm in about a 4-minute span, he starts taping up. It took him 8 minutes to tape his hands. Then he got 3 drinks of water. I said, Jesus Christ, was it that difficult? You know, the tape of the hand? then he leaves the room. I'm like, this is a joke. Oh, my God. So now he comes back in. Now, as you know, I'm going to do 30 minutes. I have everything set to my songs. The first song I use is a song that I think every boxing fan knows if they're an Arturo Gatti fan. That's AC/DC Thunderstruck. That song is about 4 minutes and 40 seconds, right? So, in that would be a round and a half. He did about maybe 2 minutes worth of work and 2 minutes worth of break.
By the way, if he told you 10 months ago he was going to turn pro, what's his record now? You know? Did he talk about his record?
So, yeah, it's just, so I'm watching him, and I'm like, you know, I'm watching him step across his feet all the time. He's going southpaw, conventional. Now, certain fighters, Terrence Crawford, can do that. I won't train a fighter to do that.
Very hard.
It's hard enough to get one stance right. You know, he's square up, he's doing, and then it's like, he's in the middle of hitting the bag, he'll stop and then he'll start shadow boxing. It's like, what the hell are you doing? And then he'll look in the mirror and do like head movement. And then he'll take a break and get water. And I'm like, this is actually comedy. I wish I was videoing it. Because you guys would love to see this. I might have to put like a secret, like my phone, like secretly videoing him the next time I see him in there. Uh-huh. So now I get my 30 minutes in, and it's about 2 minutes for the class is about to start. Oh, the other thing he was doing, then he would take about 5 steps back, and he'd come in, and he'd do this big wind-up, look like some 2-ton Tony Galletta would do. This big wind-up, and when he'd be done, like, he'd be in the wrong stance. Like, if he'd come up with a big right hand, he'd end up with his right foot first. Then he'd shadow box. I'm like, I can't make this up. I really can't. And then, you know, I didn't want the girl that teaches the class, because she's always been real cool to me. I wanted to make sure that she knew, because this guy's always started a lot of problems, that she knew that, hey, I'm not associated with this guy. So I went up to her and I was like, hey, I said, hey, enjoy your class. And she was like, hey, she's like, are you going to take your other buddies too? And I'm like, listen, I don't know them. She's like, I know you don't. She goes up to the guy who's taken, in the 30 minutes that we've both been on the bags, 15 breaks. You know? So it's like, he's like, we have 1 more minute. She said, 1 more, then you got to leave. I'm teaching a class. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what, dude? If you wouldn't have goofed off so much, you would have got your work in. That's what pisses me off. We used to had this other guy that would go in there, and he would do a speed bag routine on the heavy bag. So the day I saw him do that, I instantly don't like you. And then he hit the bag like 3 or 4 times, and then he'd almost like body grapple it. So I don't know if you're trying to do like a jiu-jitsu move. I don't know if you're trying to do boxing. I don't know what you're doing. All I know is you look ridiculous. But he's another one that would hit the bag 5 or 6 times, and he'd walk away. He'd kind of like tackle the bag, then he'd walk away from him. And then he'd sit there and he'd get a drink. I'm like, you know what? Your work ethic just annoys me. It just irritates me. I'm like, God damn it. And then he's another one. Then it's like, oh, classes are at the start. Oh, well, I'm not done yet. Well, you know, you would have been if you would have just put your balls on the wall and gave an effort. The other I just wanted to report was this past weekend I did get to go to, I wasn't sure I was going to get to go with the weather, but I was able to go to Lock Haven for the annual boxing show, and I'm glad I did. You know, it's always a good time, and this was the first year they started the Lock Haven Boxing Hall of Fame, and I'm waiting for my call to the hall one day. And it's not more than anything, the fact that, you know, I did 5 weight classes in 2.5 months, and that's the one thing I'm doing with. The one guy that I did fight my junior year, I moved up 2 weight classes to fight him. Now, he was a marginal heavyweight. Like, he used to actually drink water to weigh over 195. But if you looked at him, you would have thought he was 215, 220 solid. Wasn't much taller than me, but, you know, and he was just strong and physical and just ruthless in there. He's the one that cut me real bad in the mouth. And the one day I was talking to the Navy coach, Jimmy McNally, and they're like, oh my God, yeah, you fought him? I'm like, yeah, he cut me in the mouth real bad. And I'm like, yeah, he went with the Navy SEALs. I'm like, well, I can believe it. And I saw him on a Navy SEAL training video. Now he is one of the heads or leaders of SEAL Team 12.
Nice.
But,
so I think you told us
they had the Hall of Fame. And the funniest part of the night, they're bringing all the alumni in the ring after certain bouts. So it's all by when you sign up. I'm usually one of the first ones there, so I'm one of the first ones to sign up. It's that every year. So they say, okay, you're going to be after bout 3. You and another guy that was a teammate of mine are going to be after bout 3. I'm like, okay. And so the fight we're after is the female fight. This girl from Navy, who looks like she's all of 10 years old, beat the shit out of this girl. This girl was barely 5 feet tall, if that. Runs across the ring, pounds this girl for 3 rounds, and actually legitimately breaks her jaw. So what we're supposed to do is they have people giving out the medals, then a couple of representatives from the alumni get in the ring, and we greet the fighters. But since she beat this girl's ass so bad, both girls were already out of the ring getting the post-fight physical by the time we got in the ring. So we looked at each other, me and this guy Joe, and we're like, well, what do we do? We're like, well, we're supposed to greet the fighters. There's no fighters to greet. So we just greeted each other. We raised each other's hands. You know, the referee cheered. The people cheered. You know, we're looking at each other like idiots. We're like, well, what do we do now? Look at the referee, like, what do we do? He's like, if you guys want to get out of the ring? We're like, I'm kind of, yeah, we still stupid in here. But, you know, we did have a good laugh over it.
Cool.
I have to send you guys some of the photos. The after party was great. You know, I brought the Italian food.
Nice. All right. Well, I guess till next week, that's all we got. Definitely.
All right.
Going to have a guest next week for sure. I don't know whether it's going to be pre-recorded or not, because I think it's going to be coming up close to his fight. But we got offered Steve Claggett, who's going to be fighting Danny O'Connor, who we actually interviewed not too long ago after his, well, a long, actually, it was a long time ago. It was like 9 years ago. We first interviewed him. And it was after he fought at the Dorchester Armory, which was right around the street, right around the corner from my old house in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Little suburb of Boston. So, it's kind of crazy that it's coming around full circle here.
I just thought of something, and it would be kind of remiss if I didn't mention this. One of the first guests that we had on the show after I became co-host in 2008 just passed away this past week. Joey Giambra, uncrowned middleweight champion. Just such a nice, classy, good guy. And he had been battling illness. I believe he was around 85 years old. I still keep in contact with his son and daughter on Facebook. Very nice people. And just sadly, you know, we lost him. And then I believe we lost another one in the boxing world today. I'm looking up right now. So it's been a little bit of a rough stretch. This was, we also lost, known as the godfather of Mexican boxing, Rafael Mendoza, passed away at 80 today. They advised more than two dozen Mexican world champions and was always proud to say that the only contract he ever signed was the one with his wife.
There you go. Nice. Well, we'll definitely be missed. Yeah, Joey, that was... We actually found out by coincidence he was a training partner of Mike, the original Iron Mike, we used to call him, Mike Pusateri.
Yeah, we always tried to get him on the show, and every time we'd call him, he was never available. And then, then a couple of years ago, he passed away.
Yeah,
we lost a couple of really good guests that we've had over the years.
Yeah.
Goody Petronelli, Lou Duva. Iron Mike we were supposed to have on there, never did. Joey Giambro now.
Yeah. Well, lots of them. Well, it's a good thing we're still alive with the storm coming through. Especially with the thunder snow you guys had down there in Philly. I was watching that on the freaking news.
Yeah.
You had a snow-nado.
Well, that's a good one. One of the guys that posted a video of the thunder snow was a disc jockey from the one radio station I listen to, so I hear him all the time.
Yeah, I was like, wow. We didn't get that. We got a couple of little gusts, but it's been pretty decent, not too bad. It's good for me, firewood-wise, you know, getting the calls again, so that's good. But anyway, till next week, I think we're going to call it a night, and we'll have a lot more to talk about. We'll have a guest, hopefully.
What?
All right, guys.
All right, guys. All right, have a good week.
Bundled up.
Adios.